everyone. We're going to go ahead and reconvene the Story County Commission meeting. Moving along now to item number 10. This is a discussion of possible action. It's to authorize the Story County Manager to approve a contract with the United States Geological Survey up to $11,000 for the USGS to acquire high-resolution digital elevation data developed from airborne LIDAR in the Mark Twain Estate, Six Mile Canyon, Virginia City, and Gold Hill areas of Story County, Nevada. The LIDAR data will be used to evaluate the topography for the purpose of planning and developing stormwater flood mitigation in the subject areas. Mr. Osborne.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. Austin Osborne for the record from planning. We've talked about this topic for quite some time now, that the county is working on doing flood mitigation studies for the Mark Twain area, particularly also looking at Six Mile Canyon and the Comstock areas. Part of this project here is the United States Geological Survey, USGS. They will be doing flyover LIDAR imagery, which is like infrared imagery. It gives you extremely high-resolution topography of the ground surfaces of this entire region. And while they're doing that, they offer to the counties to say, if you'd like to kick in a few extra dollars, we'll do it in even higher resolution and go through that. So we're proposing that we do that. Lyon County, adjacent to us, is doing a similar thing, and we're trying to work with the Carson Water Subconservancy District as well as Lyon County to try to create a flood management plan in that area that's consistent between both counties and kind of integrates this whole region, mostly for the benefit of the Mark Twain Estates in this case. In this case, there is a contract with the United States Geological Survey. The contract is just under $11,000, and we're asking if you could please authorize the county manager to engage in this contract as presented.
And if I might add, you know, it's no secret that last summer before that, Mark Twain got hammered. And we said all along we need to proactively address long-term solutions out there. This is a huge step in that process. We have to plan for it so we know what to do. We have to plan collaboratively with Lyon County so that we don't solve our problem and create a bigger problem for them. So this is, we really encourage you guys. This is a great expenditure. And we should spend more than $11,000, I'm going to tell you, just recovering from anyone's storm down there. So.
And if you don't mind, I'll just remind you, the imagery that will be created from this isn't going to sit on a shelf. It's going to be used immediately by Far West Engineering and by the Carson Water Subconservancy's consultant. We'll have to pick a consultant through a process they have in RFI. And that consultant will use this high-resolution imagery in order to come up with a flood planning for both of these regions.
We don't have current mapping of the topography?
Not to this resolution and to this detail. There is a study that was done in 2011. It was like a phase one study to say these are the general suggestions of what should happen for flooding in the area. This is really going to take that study into much higher detail of every culvert, street, and waterway.
Okay. Would this information be accessible to the public?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I don't know about the data behind it. That might be proprietary to the county, but I have to look into that, but anybody would be able to, you know,
obtain this. Would this be something that could be put on our website then that people could access?
I think so. I'll have to look in how that works as far as the data, but I'll look into that.
Okay.
And we can commit. We'll share it to the extent allowable by USGS and systems capacities.
So. And it's a very, these files are massive in size. They're a lot of data.
Okay, this is an action item, so we can take any public comment if anyone would like to speak on behalf of this. Hearing none, staff's recommendation for approval.
Yes, absolutely, I'm sorry.
Okay, get a motion for approval.
Okay. There's a motion on your cover sheet there if you'd like to use.
Okay. Ready?
Yeah.
Based on the recommendation by staff, I, Commissioner Jack McGuffey, authorize Story County Manager to approve a contract with the United States Geological Survey, USGS, up to $11,000 for the USGS to acquire high-resolution digital elevation data developed from the airborne LIDAR in the Mark Twain Estates, Six Mile Canyon, Virginia City, and Gold Hill areas in Story County.
Okay. I'll second your motion. It's been moved and seconded to approve this contract for $11,000. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Very good. Moving along now to item number 11. This is discussion, possible action, approval of resolution number 17-465, clarifying the economic benefits of improved rail service to and from Story County and the Tahoe-Reno Industrial Center and the Northern Nevada region by means of rail-oriented land ferry system, and recommending to the Nevada Department of Transportation that the benefits of a land ferry system are studied in further detail and that it applies for and accept federal, state, and other funding opportunities to develop and carry out a state plan for land ferry rail service.
And while Mr. Foster and his team come up and get ready for a presentation, I just want to add, I only met them telephonically probably about 30 days ago. But if you can picture a county as small as we are, we get to work with a lot of really cool stuff. We've got a couple others that we've signed non-disclosure agreements on that were in various stages. But this is the coolest thing in the world. And this video that you will see has got an awful lot of us on staff just super excited. So I'll let you guys kick off because they know their stuff.
By the way, Mr. Foster, who's taking the lead?
Steve
Gunnels.
Okay.
Thank you.
For the record, my name is Steve Merrill, and I'm the Chief Location Engineer for Nevada DOT. And we came up with this idea quite some time ago. But today I'm here with Dr. Alex Paz. We ended up going through a research phase of this. It was a high level, you know, to see if what we were proposing actually made sense. And it came out that it very well makes sense of what we're proposing. And I'm also here with Robinson Foster. He's with the Steel Interstate Coalition. And all of us will be talking a little bit during this presentation. But anyways, let's get into the PowerPoint. I wanted to cover a few items. You know, food for thought. What is a land ferry system? Because most people have never even heard of what a land ferry system is. Some of the previous research, because I think that is also important to know that other research has actually been done in this area. Why a land ferry? The timeline of events. You can see how we're working towards this, and as we keep going, we're getting more and more momentum going. The proposed goals going forward, who's involved, future research and a business case. So as we develop this further, we got to have a business case on how we're actually going to get this going and the plan going forward. Go ahead, Alex. And these are the food for thoughts that I think of, you know, when I try to explain this to people. You know, all breakthroughs start with break with existing thinking. And so engineers get trapped in existing thinking, and sometimes you just got to break away from it, just, you know, to get a new perspective. Think win-win. The enemy of the best is good. Sometimes we do good, but we don't do our best. And synergize the practice of creative cooperation. Go ahead, Alex.
All right, so now I'm going to show you just more video.
Excuse me, sir. I'm going to have you come up to the podium because we need to...
Go ahead and start the video, Alex.
We need the microphone to pick you up there. It won't pick you up where you're sitting, so...
Okay, go ahead and start from the beginning. Just talk through your videos.
Who can talk here? Either one of you can. You can use this microphone here. Just that little camera will switch. So either one of you can do it. Okay. This way
you
don't pick up.
Okay. I'll just talk from right here. Hopefully we can get this going. Anyways, in the beginning of this video, unfortunately it was John Tyson's voice that did this. But what we're explaining is when we start looking at the goals of the United States, we're not doing anything to actually get to those goals. We're using the same old tools and expecting different results. But what this land ferry system is, it's a system where truckers, cars, any mode of transportation that's on our highway system can quickly get on a land ferry system. And what's going to be out there is a radio system, just like a weather channel, that'll broadcast to you the next departure time and when and a toll cost for the system. We'll see if we can get going here. But anyways, once you pull into the land ferry terminal, there's going to be different types of fuel available. There's going to be parking for, let's say, autonomous vehicles that could drop you off, or transit-type systems. And this is the Cadillac version of one of these terminals. There's also the scaled-down version. But once you're tolled and you paid your toll, you'll pull into the terminal. The trucks will be lined up first, and then the other vehicles. And in the future, we could also double stack the cars. But in the terminal itself, for electric vehicles, we're going to make it available for charging electric vehicles. If you are, let's say, a company like UPS or Federal Express, you could come in, drop off your truck, let it go on the land ferry, and then on the other side, a driver could pick it up and take it from there. For independent truckers, they can drop the truck off, get on the train, drive with it, and get their downtime that's required now through the logs. Once everything is loaded up, the doors are closed, and it's quickly loaded on. You can get the whole train loaded as quickly as you can get the people on and off the train. And so that's the goal of how quickly this whole system is going to load. One of the things with this type of system, when you're looking at it, we can leverage a lot of our solar, wind, geothermal, any resources, natural resources within the state, we could use those to power the system. UNLV just went through the study, and it was going to create 47,000 plus jobs, 318 permanent jobs during the operation of this system. The original length of the system that we had to look at was in between Wells, Nevada, and Fernley. We limited the research just to Nevada. Now, in the future, the next proposal that we'd like to do is from Salt Lake City, Utah, to Oakland, California. This is Dr. Paz, who is speaking in this. You know, and basically what we're saying is with a research project and a project that is this complex, we need everybody to become involved. And we need to start getting some of the answers for the questions that was left out of the first phase. Out of the first phase, we showed a benefit to the state of Nevada of over $7 billion to create a whole new track, to create the whole system. It was just over $4 billion. And so what we want to do is refine those costs and come up with more of a real plan that we could put forward to the county commissioners and to the state of Nevada. So we have answers instead of questions. We need to start getting more of the answers. And so these are some of the things in the next
phase is what we're going to be trying to address. And Ken Bannon here, he's the chief traffic safety officer for the state of Nevada. He's talking about the safety benefits of what this land carry concept could do. You know, by removing the traffic, removing these drivers, removing the tired drivers from the highway, we can actually go after and start reducing that zero fatality goal that Nevada DOT actually has. Because if we continue on the way we are, we're not going to ever get towards that goal. And something like this is a big step towards doing that. What's that, Alex? Other than that, this is Stan Hanel. I don't know if you guys know Stan. He's with the Electric Vehicle Association. And Stan is a huge proponent for this concept and for further research in this type of technology. I think in any of the technologies that we look at in the future, either electric vehicles, connected vehicles, on-demand autonomous vehicles, these type of technologies in the future, it all fits in to what we are proposing here. And so with that, basically in this video, what it would be asking you is for your support in any way you could give it. And we just kind of go back over, you know, some of the goals that we had in here. And so let's go on to the next slide, Alex.
And if I may, in the meantime, Steve, maybe you can validate as part of your presentation.
Okay.
We'll get this video, the link sent to us.
Okay.
We will make it available to the public. Anybody that wants it, just contact my office.
Yeah.
Because it really is a great video that summarizes the project. But two things that I caught in there, amongst many others, is the speed. I just spent over 2 days on the Alaska Railroad.
Oh, yeah.
That creeps along at about 25 miles an hour. As I recall, with eliminating at-grade crossings, you know, your speed estimates are between 80 and 110 miles an hour.
Is that correct?
And then the other thing I think that's important to note is I saw a cost estimate in there that travel on the land ferry ultimately could prove to be about half as costly as over-the-road transit.
Yes.
Okay. So those are, I think, two major items.
Yeah, and Dr. Paz can talk more about how we came up with those figures.
Okay.
But anyways, I'll let you go from here, Alex.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. Thank you very much for the opportunity. I'm very sorry that the video didn't have sound. We tested before and it worked, and now it's not working. However, if you Google, you go online and you type Nevada Land Ferry, the first link that you will find is a link where we have the entire report, all the engineering analysis that we did with all the data sources, the methodology, the numbers. It's web-based, so it's relatively easy to navigate. There is also an executive summary. It's about 2 pages long with all the core numbers. And there is also this video, as well as a couple of other videos of operational systems that in other countries where some of the characteristics of the land ferry are there, but it's not exactly what we are proposing here. So to summarize, we did a engineering analysis, benefit-cost analysis, and we included the cost of the system, building the system and operating the system over 40 years. And we also estimated the benefits, some of the benefits, not all the benefits, but some of the major benefits of the system, especially engineering benefits, travel time savings, emission savings, crashes reductions, vehicle maintenance cost reductions. And we got about 1.7 as the benefit cost, which means that for every dollar that we spend, we will get $1.7 back. But that number is conservative because we didn't include items such as the maintenance of the bridges. There will be a significant reduction in that cost. And also, we estimated the employment that the system will generate in the region only for building and operating the system. There will be other employment generated as accessibility to land will be provided by the stations along the alignment, so that will make that will create opportunities for companies to relocate to places where there is land value is lower and where people can go to work. So those are not included in this analysis. That will be part of our next level evaluation. Consequently, once again, that number there is relatively conservative. Next, please. So just...
Doctor, before you go on, can I get you to go ahead and introduce yourself for the record?
Sure.
I don't think we got that on tape yet. And if you spell your last name.
All right.
That way the clerk can get it in the testimony.
Absolutely. My name is Alexander Paz. Paz is P as in Paul, A as in Apple, Z as in Zebra. I am a professor of civil engineering at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, and I am also the director of the Transportation Resource Center at UNLV.
Okay, thank you.
All right, so just to keep things into perspective, I have a question there. How many tons per miles per gallon we can get today using trucks and the corresponding number using rail and truck? You can see there the significant difference between the two. Next, please. Similarly, we have ton miles per gallon, per dollar, between the two systems, 20 for truck, 156 for rail and truck, significant difference again. Next. And in terms of safety, we get much more ton miles per fatality for the rail and truck combined versus the truck. So here you can see from one perspective the significant difference between the two modes of transportation. And these numbers are coming from the USDOT, Department of the Statistics. So one of the...
That's an annual number for the whole United States.
Can you go back, please, Steve? It's per gallon, the first number, per dollar, and per fatality.
Those are annuals.
You know, like the per fatalities.
Those are
nationwide?
Yes, those are nationwide, right? And it's for one fatality, for example, the last one, right? We can, trucks can roll for 700 million ton miles, okay? While the rail truck, what is that, 3 billion ton miles for one fatality. And the same thing with per dollar and per gas, all right? For the entire country, right? So one of the next slide, please. One of the motivations for, there are multiple ones. Economics is one, safety is one. One very important is congestion. Most of the trucks obviously go from the ports to the distribution centers, and especially for our region, the ports of Los Angeles, Oakland, Long Beach, they are surrounded by urban land, by urban development. So what we did in the past of building bypasses to avoid the trucks to go through the urban areas is not possible any longer. And this picture here is from a regular day, average day in Los Angeles, one of the interstates that is connected to the ports there, and is almost a parking lot. And this is something that happens not every single day, but in a very regular fashion. And we can see this in other places throughout the country. And continuing doing what we have been doing in the past, which is building more freeways, it's at some point not sustainable and is not the smartest way to tackle the problem. And that's why we are proposing something that seems very radical but very efficient at the same time. Next, please. This is yours.
I threw in this slide. You know, this is up in Canada where they had a truck-on-train scenario. And so I just wanted to show that this isn't something brand new. The idea of doing something similar to this has been around the world. The difference is that we're putting the tractor on with it and the side-loading system. And so you're not in the terminal very long. But you can look up the ads for these type of things, and you can look through all the benefits that they'll list. But with us, we're listing even more benefits than what these common systems are already doing. What else? And so I just wanted to go through a quick timeline
of this. Originally, we had proposed it in Nevada in 2002. In 2006, Wyoming did it. 2014, UNLV, I can hardly say it from here. I'm going to step up.
So you published your report. In 2015, UNLV started the website. 15 again, partners with NDOT to make our video, and hopefully you guys do go to that and watch the whole video. It was pretty unfortunate that we couldn't get that 6-minute clip of it. In 2016, Rail Solutions with Robinson Foster, that you'll be hearing from here shortly, got on board, and their team really started pushing for this technology. One of the things I wanted to let everybody know that we have been talking to other states. I talked 5 times with Ben D'Alba. He is in charge of the port, the rail and port authorities in the state of California. He likes the idea, but we have to have the state of Nevada on board before we get into any agreements. And there's some legal issues with that that during the next legislature we're going to have to clean up before we can actually get into those contracts with him and with the state of Utah. 2016, and this is important for Nevada because, and I'll try to explain this here in a second, the Panama Canal opened up the expansion of the Panamax size containers. And so what that means is they were trying to take these Panamax ships through the Panama into the Gulf area and unload them there, bypassing Nevada and the West Coast ports. Well, the response to that is a response from the Port of Oakland and the state of Utah. Well, the state of Utah wants to put in an inland port. It's what it's called. And so what they're going to try and do is take these containers now right out of the port. They're not going to try and sort them in the port and take them through Nevada into Utah and sort them there. The reason why I bring this up is because that's going to have an impact on our rail capacity in Nevada. In 2017, we finished the phase two scope. In 2017, the Inland Port Authority approved through the Utah State Legislature. This is through the World Trade Center, Derek Miller. We've had several conversations with Derek as well. And I forget who's in charge of it now. Sue is our contact in Utah with the Port Authority in Utah now. Conversations started with the UPRR. But with that, how the law, again, is currently written for the state DOT, we can only have minimum conversations about what we can and cannot do with it. And hopefully we can get that changed in the next legislature. Okay, go ahead, Alex. The proposed goals determine how to optimize. I don't know why I came back over here. I'm going to see it. I'm going to get back over here. I'm sorry. Optimize freight passenger service in the IA corridor. Study endpoints leading to optimum safety and economic benefits. And this was the goals also for the phase two. During the phase one, it was more as a high blush look to see if any of this made sense whatsoever. And of course it did, so that's why we're here today. Evaluate how rail improvements will affect the lifecycle costs of our pavements and bridges. Even though we did some of that in phase one, we're going to take a lot larger deep dive into it in phase two. And so we can give a lot better number of how it's going to affect the DOT. But let's end with that one. Evaluate the do nothing option, because you always have to evaluate the do nothing option. Taking into consideration the Panama Canal, Whiting, and the Inland Port of Oakland, or Port of Utah operational. Like I said, these things are going to have an effect on rail service in Nevada if they're not looked at. Identify legal social issues that must be addressed to achieve our first goals. That's self-explanatory. Determine how a win-win option can be achieved for all stakeholders in the corridor, and how to structure the business plan to achieve this. So, next slide. And I think you're up now. Yes.
So who is involved? So far, the Nevada Department of Transportation sponsored
The first phase of the project, the one that I mentioned, is online. And for phase two, we are talking to UNR. They are interested in joining the team. And Robinson here with the Steel Interstate Coalition is also part of our existing team. For future research, we have a number of items. I'm listing there some of them. The most important item so far is to study or develop a business plan for whoever is going to be the owner of the system. Whoever is going to build and maintain, operate, and profit from the system, obviously they will get into it if there is money for them. So that's the most important aspect. We have the conceptual framework in terms of how they will be able to make money and how much, but we have not gone through the numbers, and that will be the core of the phase two phase for this system. Next, please. So that's all what we have for now. We will be happy to address any questions or comments that you may have. Oh, sorry. First, Robinson has some few
Thank you. My name is Robinson Foster. I'm a development director and stakeholder outreach coordinator for the Steel Interstate Coalition. We are a nonprofit representing businesses and other nonprofits and also individual citizens nationally. We are a third party working with UNLV through with Alex and with Steve as he has time available to educate and inform what we know about Steel Interstate and Land Ferry. The philosophy of the Steel Interstate Coalition is to reach out city by city and county by county because this is where strong local and regional economic development is brought forward. It has to be on a local level. And so we reach out to businesses and other nonprofits and individual cities on a city-by-city and county-by-county basis to educate about Steel Interstate and Land Ferry and to advocate that we learn more to confirm that we're on the right track. We don't, you know, if we're barking up a tree, then we should call it off. But if we're onto something, this could be a tool in the toolkit that we really need. Steel Interstate is analogous to an egg. It's what you need to operate various types of railway service. Land Ferry is entirely new in North America and requires capital investment in steel interstate improvements in order to operate with the velocity, the capacity, and the reliability that's required to serve the public. We call it congestion-free highway reliability, except it's a new standard, and it's about twice as fast. Mike Kazmierski from EDON made the point that there are traffic issues on Interstate 80, and that's exactly the point of reaching out at the local and regional level, is that we want to find what problems are out there. This is not a top-down solution coming from Washington, D.C. It's a bottom-up from the city and county level. And so Steel Interstate and Land Ferry is a possible tool to relieve congestion on I-80, not just through trucks going through Reno without any business stopping there or any need to yet, but for Donner Pass itself or port containers going clear through. And the Steel Interstate handles railway traffic all kinds. This is not an exclusive system similar to high-speed rail. High-speed rail excludes all other rail traffic because the trains are built like airplanes and they're not crash resistant. And so this is a rugged level that handles the trains you know out there now as well as the new land ferry service. Briefly from Mike Kazmierski's support letter, quote, an analysis of land ferry and its benefits and costs to its host railroads, truckers, local and regional economic development agencies, and the states involved will help to further the public-private partnership model in developing the I-80 corridor. He wrote that about 4 or 5 months ago. So our goal is to learn more. You may look up the full EDON letter and additional support letters when you Google Nevada Land Ferry and go to the UNLV website. You'll see those support letters laid out, as well as the full benefit, the full phase one report. And to move forward, I appreciate the commissioners of Story County considering and urge them to approve 17465 to learn more, see if we're on the right track. Any questions?
I guess my question, but you're not here asking us for any money, right?
That's correct.
This is I see this as, again, a building block that these folks, both through DOT, you know, as they approach the feds, as they approach Union Pacific and, you know, other areas of interface, you know, they can say, look, Nevada is behind this. We probably won't land this project, as you can tell, Fernie's already there. But we never say never either, and no matter what, it would have tremendous potential benefits to the businesses out in Tribe, both on a incoming shipment as well as the logistical distribution down the road.
All right. Well, we'll go ahead and take some public comment.
I think Austin wants to chime in too.
Okay.
Good morning, commissioners. Sam Toll from Gold Hill, for the record. So I'm super excited, as always, to learn about new technologies and to look at different ways of moving stuff. Your project reminds me of a short story that I read by Robert Heinlein, written in the mid-50s, called The Roads Must Roll, talking about different types of transportation. One of the things that that steps out as I consider your proposal here is that I suspect you're aware of Elon Musk's efforts at his rail, fast-speed rail efforts, and I'm guessing that you're considering, or perhaps at least with an open eye, looking at that type of technology. I've seen another engineer in Sonoma, or the Napa Valley, with a magnetic-based train system or tram system. I'm about a year back to Nevada from California, and I've watched as the bullet train to nowhere, as critics like to call it, started off with a $12 billion price tag. Now it's upwards of $69 or $70 billion, depending on what you hear. And they really are using, you know, 70s technology to move people from the middle of the Central Valley to Bakersfield with their first leg. So my concern is that the estimates of you know, production and bringing this to market and to fruition need to be, you know, carefully analyzed, and the question as to whether or not you're, you know, considering the changes in the technology systems. It sounds like your system is taking advantage of existing railway infrastructure, which is good, but there's obviously big changes in the market. And as a person who looks at the investment of taxpayer dollars, I'm at least concerned that, you know, the number we start with and the number we end with are going to be two vastly different numbers. So I'm really excited about your technology and look forward to learning more. Thank you.
Thank you. Steve, right?
Sam,
thank you. First, Sam's questions are exactly what we want to get at in the Phase 2 study, that if 17465 goes through, Sam's question is exactly the sort of question we want to answer. And the a more detailed answer is that confirming, yes, the steel interstate infrastructure and the land ferry technology are essentially off-the-shelf, proven. We see steel interstate railway services, including land ferry, serving airports, serving off-street parking garages, serving hyperloop stations, serving high-speed rail stations, but not replacing, not competing for their niche market share. Those unique technologies, both existing and futuristic, are some of them are unproven. The magnetic levitation and the hyperloop are as yet unproven, where we're off the shelf and extremely costly, requiring their own brand new right of way. And so, again, phase two is the place that we'll want you to repeat your question if it's not clearly stated in the phase two draft outline. Alex?
I would only have to add.
Doctor?
Yeah.
I'm going to pause for about 30 seconds. siren on the roof, it'll wind up and then wind down again.
Thank you. All right. Sam, thank you very much for your question. The only thing that I will have to add to Robinson's response is basically we are closer. This is a new concept. There are a few items that require further development that are not yet in the market. For example, the sliding loading mechanism that we are proposing, exactly what we need here, needs to be developed, but it's much, much easier and closer to reality than new technologies such as the Hyperloop that are far away from being completely developed, field tested, and enhanced. We are closer to something that can be accomplished. Consequently, the numbers that we will be getting are most likely closer to reality to compared to something else that is way far from in the future. And that's it.
Thank you. All right. Come on up.
Nicole Bard, for the record. Exactly what problem are you trying to solve? And I've heard a number of different things as part of the presentation. Perhaps this was in the video. But what's lacking for me really is a framing of the problem to be solved. And within that, then, my follow-on question would be, so who's asked you in to do this? Is this you've identified a problem, you've scoped it out, and you're offering a solution? Or is this you're creating a market for something that you believe needs to be done?
I'll take a first response.
I'll just want to try it now.
Yeah. Originally,
Steve, when you get up here, get you to identify yourself.
Okay,
again.
Steve Merrill with the Nevada DOT. Originally, when I came up with the concept, I was driving back across I-80 from going out and doing another overlay project. And one of the things I said to the driver, I said, we need to get these trucks off our highway and over onto that rail. And the problem is we don't know how to do that because they're beating up our highway and it's costing the taxpayers a lot of money. Well, once we, you know, came up with this concept and a lot of other things came out that it looked like we could improve upon safety, economic development, and just a whole host of different things, you know, started coming out from it. And so that was really what came out of not only UNLV's report, but the Wyoming report that I was alluding to. That's the reason why they did it as well, was because of the pounding on the highway.
And so I have a follow-on question around infrastructure. I mean, we know that our infrastructure is crumbling in this country, so our road infrastructure needs money to get repaired even if your trucks aren't on there. You're going to be, are you going to be running on existing rail, which will then congest that infrastructure, and or will you then, are you also thinking that you're going to have to create a parallel or a replacement infrastructure for the rail that you're going to need to ride on? And then tagged on to that, you can't do that without federal funding, so you are here asking for money to the extent that it's going to be taxpayer money that funds it.
No, because what this, ultimately, how I see this going is it's going to have to be a P3 public-private partnership kind of a deal. And what I see in this is if you can make a large enough business model, then private investment would invest and operate this. I'm looking, you know, most people, and when you think of a train, all that your model is what you currently see. And what this is a model of more of something on a transit type schedule where it's reliable. During the winter time, you can get through it, you know, like the shipments that we had to get across the Sierras this year. A lot of those were delayed, you know. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, no,
I don't know if I did or not.
So this would fix those delays.
Yeah.
And Steve, isn't the real answer, that's where phase two will take you?
Yes.
You know,
and,
part,
which is the stuff.
Exactly.
And that's what we're really trying to get at is coming, you know, I always hate to go to a presentation with, you know, more questions than answers. Mm-hmm. But really, that's where we're at with this. And what we're saying is, with the potential that this is showing, we need to get those answers. You know, and for...
So there's any redundancy between this and other projects that other organizations may be having?
No.
So this is it?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Would you note the estimated savings to highway pavement from phase one?
Or maybe, but I didn't remember the number.
Right? Yeah.
You go out to his left.
I think it was, what was it, 1,000 million? Approximately a billion, I think it was. And that was a conservative, where's travel time, payment maintenance, yeah, $500 million. And I think that's, you know, when Dr. Paz did this, I was kind of on the other side of it. He was very conservative with those numbers. We're knowing, you know, how much it actually cost us. It's a lot more than that.
Yeah, because that doesn't include the bridges. The bridges were left, and they are pretty expensive.
Yeah.
To the maintenance. And just to complement Steve's response on the last question, you know that there are, in other countries, there are systems
which are making money. Not exactly as this one. They are not as mature as this one. But they are, even though they are not as efficient as what we are proposing, because of the primary source of the inefficiency is the loading mechanism that they use. They, truck by truck, is loaded into the train. That creates delays, and it makes the system less attractive for drivers. So when the distance is not long enough, drivers prefer to drive rather than ride the land ferry. But if in our concept, the loading is parallel, so all the trucks are loaded at the same time in a few minutes, and that makes the system more attractive and more efficient. And you probably heard the news recently of the train going from China to the UK. And that is a cargo train. And its sort of motivation there is similar to our motivation. Multiple benefits for those involved and affected.
So I'm going to assume this is the beginning of your roadshow for your project. Is that right?
We are there first.
As long as... Since I work for the DOT, I got to be invited. I don't just go out and solicit to give this presentation. And that's what I was saying. The American Public Works Association solicited us for it. American Society of Civil Engineers just solicited us. A few others have as well. And so as long as I get asked to present the information, I will present it. But I'm not going to go ask to present.
I got you. I mean, it's all new. I read it recently, very recently.
So yeah.
It's, I love the concept.
Okay.
Yeah. Any other public comment? Jack, did you have any questions?
No. Not at this time.
Okay.
Austin has something.
Austin?
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On a technical matter, Austin Osborne Planning for the record. What you have in front of you in your packet is a resolution that we worked with the applicant throughout kind of the last stages of the last week getting this prepared. There was a couple changes to that resolution. What you have in front of you is an addendum. It is a corrected resolution that has some minor modifications. The applicant did ask that the resolution cite a website. We don't recommend that a resolution cites a website, but I did go ahead, and as you see in your second document, I copied the page of the website that they asked to be referenced, put it onto a solid document, and it's attached and referenced in that resolution as its exhibit. We feel that is fine as a permanent part of the record. So the resolution you have in front of you just has basically some modifications with language text. There was an error found in a couple of things, and what you have in front of you now, and there is one there for the public as well, is the corrected version.
Right. Very good. Staff's recommendation, to approve this?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
I'll ask once again if there's any further public comment. Hearing none, Commissioner, if I can get a motion.
Sure. In accordance with the recommendation by staff, I, Commissioner Jack McGuffey, motion to approve resolution number 17-465, clarifying the economic benefits of improved rail service to from Story County and the Tahoe-Reno Industrial Center and the Northern Nevada region by means of land ferry system, and recommending to the Nevada Department of Transportation that the benefits of a land ferry system are studied in further and detail, and that it apply for and accepts federal, state, and other funding opportunities to develop and carry out a state plan for a land ferry rail service.
I second your motion. It's been moved to second to approve resolution number 17-465. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you, gentlemen. All right, we're going to move along now to item number 12, discussion of possible action, approval of contract with DevNet for $230,413.70, entering a five-year contract for CAMA software to replace current ADS software being phased out. Mr. Gallagher, are you going to take the lead?
I think I'll let Ms. Seaton do that right now, and then I'll follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Good afternoon. Janice Seddon, Story County Assessor. As previously, we've been before the board months before, and I know also Mr. Gallagher has also been before the board. Last December, we received a letter from our current software company, Advanced Data Systems, that they would be closing their doors as of December 31st of 2019. So the last 7 months, it has been a valiant effort between 15 Nevada counties, because this has affected all 15 with the exception of the two large counties, Clark and Washoe, that are on their own software system. So we've all been working diligently. Myself and two other assessors from other counties have gone and actually done site visits to, once we narrowed it down to a contractor that we thought would best fit what we needed for these counties, not only in software, but finance as well, as far as cost. So we've come before you today. We have eight counties that have already signed contracts and have approvals. We're waiting on, and hopefully by the end of the day, there will be two more. That will be 10. There are five other counties, two of which may or may not go with DevNet, and three others that two that we know are going to be on an agenda for August 3rd, one that's still waffling because they're not sure how to come up with the finance part of it. So that being said, if the board has any questions, we've had already had Mr. Loomis, our assistant DA, go through the contract with a fine-tooth comb and has approved the contract. And if you have any questions of me at this time, I'll be glad to answer them.
I have a question for you. Is it, this is a five-year contract of $230,000. What was our annual, what was the cost of the annual before? Was it paying anything, or was it paid for?
No, we paid for ADS now, and I honestly cannot speak, because what happens is our annual price with ADS, I believe it was like a lump sum for annual maintenance and procedures, and that was all of our offices with the exception of fire and sheriff, I believe.
Yeah, and we can get you that number, but Jenna is correct in that we actually had two fees primarily that we pay to ADS each year. There's an annual maintenance contract, and then for every programming change, development, whatever, there are additional fees, and they constantly, each and every year, the beauty of ADS, and now hopefully DevNet, at least for 10 counties, 12 counties, however many it is they sit down with the users and they say, okay, what's working in the assessor modules and what would you want changed? And they create those changes and they amortize the cost out over the various government entities. So, I mean, it's still a chunk of change because it's computer programming, but it is the most cost-effective approach. But we certainly can get you both annual maintenance and the individual programs, which we do charge to the individual cost units. If there's an assessor module, JANA pays for it. If there's a general one, such as payroll, that is either absorbed through the administrative account or we spread it out, one of the two. And before we move on, I do want to thank at least three people that are in the room. This has been a tough, you know, ball to hit. If you can imagine, we've had the ADS, the AS400 software forever.
And there's 34 years.
Yeah, there's a tragedy behind this that, you know, necessitates that this is the end of the road for ADS. So it is an opportunity, but it's a hell of a challenge. We had a hard time in many respects deciding what we wanted internally between all the users, as opposed to then take that times 15. So I want to applaud and commend both Shanna and Hugh that have really led our charge, but also James, because this is a big deal. You know, you've got to have the systems. You've got to have the background and the support, not just software-wise from DevNet, but network-wise. So I think these three guys have represented us very well, literally at a state level, so you've done a great job.
Okay. My next question is going to be is, are we buying the software or are we leasing the software?
We are buying the software. It will be ours.
Okay, so it's going to cost us $46,000 a year to buy this. Now, does that include the service contract as well?
That does include the service contract.
Okay.
What this contract does not include is hardware, because that's going to be a separate issue, which James Dean, I believe, is still actually waiting on a few questions before he has his final price on the hardware.
Every office will have to have hardware installed, correct?
No. It's just servers. All going to be, it's server-based, kind of like the AS400.
Okay, all right.
So, and I do want to say that this is a lot more costly than ADS. There's no doubt. Unfortunately, when you're looking at what ADS offers, I hate to say it's a dinosaur version, but it's a dying breed. There are no more programmers. They don't teach this. The new era is the CAMA system. There is so much more information that you can pull that's readily available in the system that we can't do now, that we have to ask for new programs to be written, that every time we ask for that, it costs us anywhere from $12,000 to $15,000 from ADS. We either pay that or we do without. We have to do things manually. The way these new systems work, it's all integrated. You can pull information. I mean, that's one of the things that I believe all of us, especially Hugh and myself, are really looking forward to, being able to have a plethora of reports that we can pull within moments, whereas the ADS just doesn't do that. It's a connectivity issue.
So does this include any software upgrades in this five-year contract?
Yes, it does.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So at the end of 5 years, we own this software, but we'll still be attached to a service contract going forward, and then we will have to pay for any software upgrades from that day forward.
We will. I mean, I would imagine at the end of 5 years, just like every year, we do the same thing with, I believe it's every year with ADS, that we have to up our contract. I'm not exactly sure, because that's the primary kind of goes through the commission office. We still have to renew contracts with ADS, or had to, of course, and will continue until we phase them out in 2019. But at the end of 5 years, basically what DevNet has done, not all Nevada counties are super prosperous. So what they did, and we knew it was going to be an issue for a lot of the smaller counties that don't have the finances, they have agreed to take this project that's going to take basically 2.5 years now to implement and split it up over 5 years with payment plans so that it was affordable for everyone. And
well,
we will revisit at the end of that 5 years.
If you're done at the end of 2019, that only gives us 18 months, 17 months.
2019. Well, no,
two
and a half years.
2019, okay.
Yeah.
Is it going to take that long to phase in the new system?
It will, because unfortunately, Nevada has a very how to put this where I don't, it's a very complex. Different taxation system, very complex taxation system. It is not like any other county or state in the United States.
Not everybody understands.
So with the exception of one company, which is Thomson Reuters, that's out there, and they basically have, they do Clark and Washoe. They actually acquired, they purchased companies that previously did Clark and Washoe. They have a lot of issues trying to get their programming to work, so they refused to try to take on more work. So we were a little upset about that. That's why this became an issue, as who could we find that could actually get the programming, write the programming, because there is no canned software for assessor systems. Excuse me, assessor systems. So it has to be written. That's why it is going to take quite a long time for this complex taxing system to be implemented. And this also is not just for the assessor. This contract is for the collection side in the Treasurer's Department for assessment and for building and planning and permitting and business licenses.
So another way said is there are more that need to either come on board if we can find the right modules, or we'll be looking at other solutions as well. So.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Eddy.
Mr. Chairman, as Janice so has stated, this is the first step to ending a 30-plus year relationship with our entire information systems, which is ADS. This is by far the most complex. If you ever suffer from insomnia, I would suggest you pick up the NRS that goes with the calculation and reporting of real and personal property tax, and I guarantee you, you'll be cured. This is a very difficult, convoluted, how they did this, only somebody else can tell. But by far, this is the most difficult governmental process we have. Jana and her team has done a tremendous job with this because, like anything else, there's nobody out there. All the ADS avenues we were looking about it. We even wanted to buy their source code. But the big problem with that is there is no documentation to anything they have. It's in their minds that they have had forever. And so consequently with that, this new system, I think, is going to be very dynamic. You've got the property tax assessment, which is trying to assess property, especially by the statutes, is difficult. The calculation of the property tax is difficult. The distribution, tax billing, delinquent tax modules. Then you have the personal property tax processing. My favorite, mobile home module. And then you get down into the planning and billing and the licenses. Everything interacts. I mean, the billing department, all the billing and licenses and permits are going to have to go through the assessor's application, as well as a lot of the clerk treasurers and some of it on the recorder. So it's a pretty dynamic system. This cost is going to be added to probably somewhere between 50 and 100,000 for hardware, because we have another system out there that we have to do, and that is our accounting and reporting process, which hopefully I can get some sort of leeway and groundwork done before our next meeting in August. So with that, I think Janice done a tremendous job staying focused, where other counties sometimes have not, but I think this is a really good step in moving forward.
So the assessor's office will be the first office to be phased in with the new DevNet system?
Yes.
And it will still take 2.5 years to get your office switched over?
I'm correcting myself here. My objection is to have the accounting and reporting system in before Janus system is up. And it's not going to take as much as Janus, because unlike Janus system, which is, you know, because Nevada is such an anomaly when it comes to tax assessment, reporting, all of those rules. Back office systems have been out there for years. And so as long as they can understand the state reporting requirements, i.e. PERS or whatever, they're basically all the same. The features and functions are probably pretty much the same. It's going to be a lot of point and click versus, you know, the green screen and whatever. And so our capabilities will have gone up probably 1,000%, but we're going to have to pay for it.
And I think also to answer your question, correct me if I'm wrong, Hugh, is the December 2019 is the day they turn off the lights at ADS. It is not our intent to wait until December 2019. You know, I think our short-term goal might be, obviously, a lot of this stuff needs to be timed to the tax year and the fiscal year. You don't want to necessarily change horses in the middle of the race. So I think we've got short-term targets of July of 18 and potentially fallback targets of July 1 of 19.
Right.
But we are not standing still. And
well, that's good, because we don't want to be paying for two systems simultaneously.
No, that's correct. That's mirrored systems are awful. Yeah.
So you're going from DOS to Windows. That's what you're doing.
Pretty much.
Hopefully better.
And there are some disadvantages of doing this. I mean, the one, I'm looking at JD to confirm this, but the one benefit of the AS400 system is it is bulletproof. We've right. never had an issue, including potential flood, that that has taken us down on that system.
Okay, Jack, you have questions?
Do you have any idea what the cost of the service fees might be after the 5-year contract?
No, not at this time. Like I said, even to actually extend it out to 5 years, DevNet has kind of gone out on a limb because there's other things that are included in this price, things that we have to have. Marshall and Swift mandated assessment modules. Those are outsourced because they now they come from CoreLogic, and that's state mandated where we get all of our assessment information from. So those are fees that every year they kind of go up. So even DevNet has had to try to figure out how much it's going to go up and incorporate that into the 5-year contract.
Okay. Does our current server, is it big enough to accept this, or do we have to buy a new server?
That's going to be an IT James Dean question.
New server?
The existing hardware is not compatible with any of the new software.
So that would be on top of this $230,000?
Correct.
And what are we talking about?
Depending on if we go with a full solution or if we phase it in with just these modules, we're starting at about $35,000.
Okay.
Overall countywide solution, we were looking at about $100,000.
Okay.
And that's for a full 5-year plan. You know, no more costs over that 5 years. It's a one-time fee.
Okay.
And there is a provision for that in cap projects, correct? So we do have a funding source identified in our capital projects.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Well, we open up for public comment.
Good afternoon. For the record, Sam Soul, Gold Hill. Just to clarify, and perhaps Mr. Dean can help me, we're talking about taking software package and adding some new hardware, but we're basically still working with the existing AS4000 computer backbone. Is that a fair statement?
Should I go?
Yeah, come on. It's an
AS400.
James Dean, Story County IT Director. So we're moving from an antiquated IBM mainframe, which has been in existence for about 30 years, and custom program with advanced data systems. So Mark and Sharon, a little background on them. They came from the state way back when, spun off a company to do accounting, payroll, public budget accounting, were very successful and has essentially captured 15 of the 17 counties in Nevada. So all the other rurals in the state are kind of in the same boat that we are. We're all having to transition out. So we're moving from a IBM mainframe, literally green screen, to a Windows-based system. And the complexity involved there is we're taking what we have now and kind of throwing into the trash and starting from scratch. However, the process involved, computers, is just a bunch of zeros and ones. So the data that's on the existing AS400 will port right into a new SQL server on a Windows-based system. We're going to try and not run parallel systems because of the cost involved with that. However, with such a large project, it's kind of impossible to move millions or even billions of records in even a 24-hour period. So And also, this is kind of uncharted territory for the state of Nevada. No one's ever done this before at this scale. We are kind of front running on the technology side where we're virtualizing with VMware. We're using, you know, HP hardware for our switching. Some of the floods that we just had actually just beefed up all of our core infrastructure countywide. So we are prepared to roll this out today. There's no core upgrades that need to happen. I mean, they could buy the servers today and we could start deploying them. So did that answer your question?
Yes, it did, and thank you. So basically we're talking about $50,000 a year in rough numbers for the software development.
We're looking at $35,000 to $100,000 for hardware over a five-year period.
Right.
And then after that five-year period, we will look at replacement for another five-year period. Generally, hardware in the computer world, 5 years is a really long time. So I don't like to have such a large window. And what we do on those kind of purchases is we buy the best of the best today and pray, for lack of a better word, that it lasts 5 years.
Right.
It's generally cheaper to repair and maintain existing infrastructure than it is to keep wiping the slate every 2 or 3 years. I really like to get as much return on investment as possible. I mean, we still have Dell servers in the county that are 7 and 8 years old. That's unheard of.
Right.
But again, they're working and we run them right into the ground. So.
So, thank you for that, because I think that you know, if you're talking about $50,000 a year for software to transition us in, you know, from an era when 8-inch floppies were all the rage, and bring us into the 21st century, I think that's actually a pretty good value. You know, certainly $100,000 for, you know, at the top end of the dollar expenditure for the hardware in today's climate, I think is prudent. And obviously, you know, the fact that the counties are all, you know, in the same boat, and we're all, you know, kind of trying to figure out how to negotiate, the fact that we have a software developer who's willing to take them on to, you know, take the payment process over, spread it over 5 years, I think it really is. It's remarkable because as a guy who's been involved with software development, as I'm sure you know, it's not easy, especially when you're pointing from something that doesn't have an actual set of programmers' notes that had their mindset as to what they were trying to do when they set it up. So I'm encouraged by this. I think it's a great move. My biggest concern was that we were staying with the IBM hardware, the mainframe hardware. You know, I've got a Macintosh 128K computer in my museum that basically is about 3 years older than that system. And so the fact that we're looking forward, we're moving forward, and we have something that's going to be able to generate a PDF file maybe at the click of a button would be spectacular.
And that's some of the things that we're going to be moving into the 21st century is the AS400 system had a huge set of limitations that came with it. People are like, why can't you just do X? And it's like, well, there's a 30-year backstory on that. But generally, it's the simple things. Why can't I get a PDF for my assessor parcel? Why do I even need to pick up the phone to get these things when everyone else on the planet is, you know, go to the website. We are super close to that. In fact, the website, you know, needs to be redeveloped so that is the first point of contact. We could start eliminating these phone calls, eliminating the front desk stuff, because those are all hard personnel costs. And most people don't even want to pick up the phone. Everyone's got an internet connection now. So if we can provide those services at zero cost, both to the county and to the taxpayer, it's just a win-win scenario. And moving into this Windows-based system is going to allow us to, you know, do all those bells and whistles that we couldn't do before. It's going to release a lot of those restrictions and probably provide some new efficiencies and some cost savings as well.
Thanks for that, James.
So I'm encouraged. I would hope that you guys would move forward on this and come to the county for the money. I think it's a great value. Of course, in passing, the cynic in me can't help but address what Hugh had said about the obfuscation of the tax system. I think they do that on purpose so that we don't know when our pocket's being pulled. Thank you.
All right, great. We'll ask once again if any of the public comment. Did you want to follow up on anything, Mr. Gallagher? Are we good to go?
I'm good, Mr. Chairman.
You are. Matt, did you get anything?
No, I'm good.
Okay.
Yeah, you use staff recommendation to execute the contract and move forward.
Very good. All right. Mr. McGuffey, if I can get a motion to approve this.
Okay, I'll make a motion to approve the contract with DevNet for $230,413.70, entering a 5-year contract for CAMA or CAMA software to replace current ADS software being phased out.
I'll second your motion. It's been moved and seconded to approve this contract with DevNet for $230,413.70. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Moving along now to item number 13, discussion of possible action, setting a date for a workshop to discuss possible ad valorem rate reduction. Mr. Gallagher.
Actually, I'm going to kick this off.
Okay. Mr. Whitten.
This has been a tag team approach with Austin, Hugh, myself, and countless others. I'm glad we're making progress on setting dates and keeping focus on this. I think it's very appropriate. That said, this is one of those either tip of the iceberg or peel back the layer of the onion, and you find so many more complexities. I'm not saying we can't do it. I'm saying we need to methodically stick with this, maybe even as a monthly item that reoccurs, because we have to make sure that what we do doesn't hurt us in the long run. I mean, having survived, I want to say, 2 economic downturns in the county, we survived the last one extremely well, due to positioning, budgeting, conservative, all of the above, including with the infrastructure or a stabilization fund that we never touched, you know, during that, where other local governments essentially drained theirs, including the state. So what we're finding as we do this is lowering the tax rate's easy. Raising it back up should you have to is almost impossible. You couple that with something that Mike Kazmierski mentioned during his presentation, where key community issues include effluent water issues. That issue is actually a Reno Sparks issue, in my opinion, but it's an opportunity for us. And we're working with a large group of players, including the state, the Governor's Office of Economic Development. I met with the governor yesterday. We're working on potentially, and I underscore potentially, because there's a lot to be determined yet, potentially participating in a financing mechanism to help take advantage of this opportunity. Are we where staff can recommend? Oh, no, we're a long way away from it. There are analysis being done. There will be independent analysis of that analysis so we can make sure we're making, you know, the most informed decision as we possibly can. And I would tell you something that Hugh brought up 2 years ago that I'm not going to say I scoffed at, but I doubt it highly, has come back into play again. And these are from the financial consultants, the advisors, the experts that are working with us on this project at the state's cost and the developer's cost and individual proponents of this, such as Switch and Tesla. It's quite possible that rebates could come into play and maybe a more functional, effective tool. So we need time to do that. We don't need an indeterminate amount of time, although we may need to extend it depending on what those analyses are doing and what ultimately the decision is as to whether or not you choose to participate in this program. So my recommendation looking at it is we pretty much need the month of August to figure out the viability and the interest in this regional financing, regional process for water importation from Reno Sparks to the Tri Development. If we have all of August, and my recommendation is by then we should have almost every answer, including some rock-solid legal foundations that we can run past the DA's office as far as the viability of rebates. And my recommendation is the agenda item is clean and simple. It says set X date. To me, X date should be September 19th at this stage of the game, which gives us 2 months to go ahead and really get this thing tightened up.
Well, I like your idea. I mean, we can work on this. You know, we can look at it each month as we go along. We don't need to set the tax levy until February of next year. Is that correct?
Right.
But we were a little bit behind. We got behind on it this time, and that's why it was brought up. As long as we have our tax rate levy finalized before we submit our final budget to the Department of Taxation, then we're good to go, because we're going to base the budget based on what the tax levy is, right?
Either the tax levy and or the rebate.
And so the budget process is going to start on January 1st, pretty much as it usually does. And
With any luck, with our new auditors, we're going to go ahead and get our audit done sooner, so we'll know exactly where we stand. But, you know, I'm like everybody else. I'd like to see a tax roll back, too, because, you know, I've got interest in the county, too, where I'd be paying less. But I don't think I understand that if we were to roll it back, why we'd have a problem increasing it back up again.
That was yesterday's revelation, and let me research it before I speak to
okay.
it.
Okay, because, yeah, I mean... The other thing is, too, is as we do our analysis and we get our studies done, as these tax abatements expire and how much money comes into the coffers from abatements and how much new companies come online and things like that. Yeah, I'd like, as Lance would say, I want everybody to share the wealth, but we have to have the wealth to share, too. When you look at how much money we have to work with, I think in some cases, you know, on a small reduction in property tax might not be noticeable on someone's taxes because if the value of their house goes up and we've reduced their tax rate, they're still going to be paying the same amount of taxes as they did last year. So
our focus, I think, for the next 60 days will be to both look at the good, the bad, the ugly okay. of this regional project, and at the same time, Hugh and I have talked. He is going to go break guns or whatever. I can't think of it. Politically correct term to say, but he's going to go up full speed ahead, looking at the rebates, working with Keith on the legal foundations as a hopefully a flexible way to do it.
Okay. My only concern on the rebate side of it is that when the state of Nevada did it, they did it through DMV, and I think it cost them more money to go ahead and do the rebates than the actual amount of money that they rebated everybody. It was very, very expensive, whatever process.
I agree. And take a note of that.
Okay. Why don't we go ahead? It's a discussion action item. So, how about public comment?
Okay.
Mr. Thompson, come on up.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. County Commissioner, Mr. Deputy DA, Chris Thompson, Project Manager, TRI. Just wanted to register TRI's full support for the immediate or the most rapid possible implementation of some structure for a rebate or reduction program of some sort that goes through the midterm of the 0 to 10 years out. I understand the concerns and, you know, that in many ways the county has benefited greatly by having a former high-level banking executive as our county manager who's done a marvelous job, and so I'm sure he can put his great experience and financial judgment to use on this to make it happen, hopefully. And we've also, I think, are cognizant of the fact that the county still has a lot of catching up to do on its own infrastructure. You can't go for a century in government revenue poverty, more or less, and then catch up in the space of a generation. There's still a lot of things to do. There are a lot of positions that might do well to have increased salaries in order to compete with other counties, given the fact we're dealing with global businesses. We understand that. But there is a lot of data out there all over the place talking about the revenue streams that are projected for the next 10 years. And you know, we can say, well, there's a lot of assumptions there that may not come true, but there's also, you know, someone would have projected the revenue stream we're having now, and Googles and the Zulilis and the eBays and the Amazons and the Teslas that would be here, nobody would have thought that either. So it can't hurt to plan this out. And I think if you do a 10-year structure that's reviewed each year, and then the reduction or the rebate or however you want to do it is established, it certainly should be workable. We believe that the TRI project and the companies there are prospering. The county government and the unions in the county are prospering, given the revenues. And, you know, it's time to start at least putting a structure in place so that the residents can also prosper. They're basically our shareholders for all of us here. So we just wanted to get that on the record. We appreciate the effort on the part of the commission to move this forward and to consider it and to put effort into it. So thank you very much, sir.
And just as a comment to Mr. Thompson's comments, I don't disagree with a single thing. However, you have to be very careful and precise in what that structure is and know the pluses and the minuses, you know, that you might encounter, you know, including repeated recensions.
That's right, because projections are just after projections. They're not absolutes. So we don't really know what's in store for the county going forward, because we've gone through downturns in the past. We've gone through three recessions. And when you go through those, it puts the kibosh on everything going forward. And the last one was the worst, reducing the county staffing, you know, by a third was incredible. Yeah. So it's taken all of these years to get back to what I call being whole again. So it's we don't have much of the slush fund yet. But
as a point of reference, Mr. Chairman, I pulled my notes from January 5th of 2015, which this is the original time that we looked at this, and always trying to look into the future of this. Tesla's SB1 was approved in March or September of 2014, and the SuperNAP was SB170 was approved February 17th of 2015. So, you know, we kind of looked at that, and I said, you know, I have no idea. I mean, we've got some idea now. We've got an idea. We have a, you know, there's still other people out there, but at least I feel more comfortable with it now than I did in 2015.
And I think another benefit of this potential project is through the state, through the developer, through Switch and Tesla and all the other parties, City of Reno, City of Sparks, us without paying for our pocketbook right now. We have the very best financial consultants, advisors that know the tax system as best as anybody can. So we appreciate the opportunity to go ahead and continue to work on it. We'll keep you posted. Yes. I would ask that you ask our clerk to go ahead and agendize this yet again, just as an informational update, discussion only, no action potentially for the third Tuesday in August.
Check your third question. Tuesday in August. I just wanted to state that this started many years ago, of course, and I've kind of stuck my foot in there to keep it alive. And seeing our budget and the money coming through the county, I see it as a doable thing. Yes, we have to watch what we do, though. We can't just take some arbitrary number. We have to kind of think ahead of what other impacts we're having. Like right now, we got the ADS system that we're replacing. We got cameras for the sheriff department. Yeah, so we constantly get bombarded from stuff that comes down through the legislature. So we got to have a cushion to make sure we're okay. But I still think that, and I know we can do this. So I plan on seeing that happen. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Jack. Any other public comment? Come on up.
Nicole Bart for the record. Several months ago, I came up and I asked a question regarding a study that was commissioned and paid for by TRI to the tune of $19,000. The reason I knew about that is because Chris Thompson had posted as much, and in fact exactly that, on the Highlands board. And at the time I asked the question, have you seen that report? And no one on the commission or on staff said that they had. And it was a study to look at revenues over the next 10 years to determine if a tax rebate or a tax cut were possible. So my question today is, have you seen that report as of now? Is that something that can be made public?
I haven't
seen it.
So since Chris Thompson is here today, may I ask him the question? May I address that to him?
I'll just ask if Chris wants to respond to that or not. Because the answer to your last question is no, you can't ask anybody in the audience. You have to ask the board.
I now know that rule, so.
Chris Thompson, TRI project manager. The report was done by a consultant of our lawyers, and We have not sent the actual details of the report to Story County yet, but we did generally describe the concept that was proposed, and that may be discussed at the workshop. I think it is one of many alternatives I think available to the county. But I have to work with our outside counsel and get permission before we disclose his own internal consultant's report. But the concept generally has been disclosed. I am not a tax person, so I don't feel competent to describe it accurately up here, other than I know it and a lot of other projects will be disclosed or will be discussed at the workshop.
Alternatives. And if I might just chime in on Mr. Thompson's comments, we're at that stage where we are starving for numbers. Again, I am going to go outside to an independent arm's length analyst consultant to make sure that numbers we're seeing are valid, not just your numbers, but the sooner we get those, the better off it is for us. Because, you know, I agree with Commissioner McGuffey, Commissioner McBride, Commissioner Gilman, it's time to stop talking and start doing, but we got to figure out what doing is while we do it. So if those numbers are available, I mean, I'll call Bob myself. I talked to him yesterday at the Capitol during the go-ahead meeting, not about this, but about other things. So. And he seems to be supportive of at least researching the legalities of the rebate process as well.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Any other public comment?
Sam Toll, Gold Hill, for the record. So I'm super encouraged about this. I fully applaud everyone to move forward on this. One thing that I would like to suggest, and I know that I'll be bringing it up when these things come about, is that we've got a couple of credit card bills that we've got out there. And I know that when we talk about how we would structure something like this, you know, when we talk about giving a couple of cents on $100 per property, assessed property value, you know, that kind of money is great, you know, but it might be $50, $60, $70, $100 per property owner. And I know that we've got a bill out at TRI that for improvements that, depending on who you know, what numbers you look at, are between $20 and $60 million. We've got the USDA loan down at the water treatment plant. And so it might be prudent for us to look at all of the different ways we can use this money. Obviously, the public interest is what is key in our focus. But paying off credit cards is always a good thing. Thank you very much, and I really encourage you to approve this.
Great. Thanks.
And just for Mr. Toll's edification, I would not disagree. I mean, 20 years in corporate finance and however long here in public finance. Except a major portion of that debt, which is probably around $45 million plus or minus, bears no interest whatsoever. So I got to tell you, that's pretty cheap money in today's world. But, you know, we'll look
at it.
Still
got to pay it, though.
Still got to pay.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Anybody left? Public comment? Hearing none? Okay.
I guess you've got to remind everybody that
the date again.
Remind everybody that this would be for everybody, business owners, even out of the tribe, the shop owners here, homeowners. So everybody's going to hopefully get a piece of that pie.
If they pay property tax, they'll benefit.
Well, and actually, to tell you how complex this gets, and I'm kind of looking at Chris because I think I've heard this through his camp, but there was actually an idea. Not a commitment, not a project or anything, that we're looking into the legalities of rolling back the tax rate, if that's the path we take, for everywhere but tribe. And basically trying to draw a bubble around tribe and let them, you know, help them share the wealth. So I don't know if that's legal. We have a lot of
research. Yeah, we got some research to do. Yes.
Yeah, and I doubt it.
I don't know. I sit on the Board of Equalization, and I think if somebody came to me, I'd have to look at the district attorney. And I'm going to look to him anyway and ask him that do we need a motion to go ahead and either continue this or re-agendize it for the
Let's
October.
Let's do a motion to set it for the date certainty. And then
Scott, I recommend we set the date of September 19th,
2017. Well, summertime, you told me it's the second week in August. So.
Well, that's to discuss it. But I mean, let's hold the workshop in
September.
It's
just, okay.
But we can do an interim discussion.
Right. I don't think we need a motion, do we?
Okay, well, we set a date for a workshop. So yeah. we'll set a date for
September 19th.
Okay. If I can get you to go ahead and make a motion to set a workshop for September the 19th.
Chapter 13, Jeff.
Yeah.
Okay, I make a motion to set the date for September 19th. No time at this. Anyway, September 19th for a workshop to discuss possible ad valorem rate reduction.
Very good.
If I could get you to amend that motion.
What's that?
If I could get you to amend that motion, you know, maybe add to it and or rebates, because that is a very strong path we're pursuing to see if it's legal and what the numbers are.
Okay.
Rate reduction or rebates. Okay.
So I'll make a new motion setting a date. I'll make a motion to set a date for a workshop. That date would be September 19th for a workshop to discuss possible ad valorem rate reduction and or rebate.
Very good. I'll second your motion. I'll move to a second. Go ahead and set the workshop on September the 19th. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. All right. We're going to move along now to item number 14. This is discussion and possible action. Business license second readings.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, please bear with me. One of the mementos I brought back from Alaska was a case of pneumonia. So I'm going to try to get through these. I want to note that on the consent agenda, you approved 55 first reading licenses. And ironically, you have 55 second readings all recommended for approval. So these would be motion to approve items A through item FFF. So they are as follows: Dorner Manufacturing Corporation, Abiensa, Abner, Tama General Partnership, Pigler Automation LLC, Advanced Machines and Tool Corporation, Specialty Welding Supply, Small Mine Development LLC, Progressive Pest Management, Coating Unlimited, Inc., Western Environmental Testing Laboratory, SNC Corporation of America, Applied Innovation Group, Inc., Integrity Safety Concepts, Inc., Compoint Corporation, Pro, Harrelson Mechanical, Inc., Applied Engineering Energy Systems, Laser Depth Dynamics, Inc., Humanis Solutions, LLC, Oceaneering International, Inc., Northern Nevada Fire Protection, Inc., Newmark Corporation, R.S. Hughes Company, Inc., Avnet, Inc., Kistler Instrument Corporation, S&A Solutions, Inc., Valkyrie Metalworks, LLC, Phantom Technical Services, Inc., IBG Proof Computer GmbH, Chemital U.S. Inc., Motion Controls Robotics, Inc., Michigan Customs Machine, Passara Technologies, Inc., Phoenix Consulting, LLC, Automation and Modular Components, Inc., Partner Personnel, Inc., Interall Corporation, Lance Johnson, Inc., Noltech Systems, Inc., Averna, Calgary Design Team, Inc., Ambrell Corporation, IBG NDT Systems Corporation, Exact Laser Measurements USA, Fuller Engineering Company, LLC, Wise Consulting and Training, Inc., Nevada Tapmaster Airway Automation, Logomat Automation Systems, Inc., AJ Stoves, AIDA Consulting Service, Copper State Bolt and Nut Company, Abacor Benzel U.S., Structures, Inc., D.W. Fritz Automation, Inc., Diverse Automation, Inc., Goodell, Inc., Robot Supply, Inc., Carson Manufacturing, Inc., and Asian Union Chemicals, Reno. All to be approved.
Thank you, Mr. Whitten. All right. Any public comment regarding the second readings, these business licenses? Hearing none, if I get a motion for approval.
I'll make a motion to approve A through FFF.
All right. I'll second your motion. It's been a motion and a second to approve All second readings of A through triple F. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. All right, moving along now to public comment.
So, Sam Toll for the record, Gold Hill. So we're here 3 hours into our meeting. We're all, you know, blood sugar levels are down. We're ready to go get some grub. And I'm here going to borrow the last 3 minutes. I kind of feel like Ted Cruz. I remember him reading in a filibuster my favorite book, Green Eggs and Ham. It was remarkable to watch that happen. I'm here in front of you to once again suggest that the public comment section be moved from the end of the meeting to the beginning of the meeting. I think it sends the right message to the public at large that they come first in this county. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Toll. Any other public comment? Meeting's adjourned.